Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Hesitates to believe in the all-knowing being. We can see history, our first great country, made a lot of mistakes along the way. Now we see a dire need to believe in something greater than all the things on our minds today. How many deaths can we die? How many tears can we cry? When will we spread our
God, we trust, but do we really mean it in light of how?
Assalamu alaikum, and that is God's peace be upon you. And welcome to another edition of Not Just Talk on AM360.org. This evening, I'm happy to report that we have a host and guest tonight, Lou Princess Aziz. And assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Welcome
to be here.
I'm excited about what we're going to be sharing with the audience this evening. And we've been pretty much sharing every other week recently the focus of executive functioning, and there are a lot of aspects of that. Foundationally, it's really sharing with the audience that we have a life, inner person that most of us don't know a lot about. And so with that, we're going to share with the audience executive function and other matters, particularly pertaining to the family, the father and mother, gaining skill sets that will help us to have a better future for our children. And with that, I turn it over to you, Lou Princess.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the interest in what we're sharing. And I first want to say that if there's any success to come out of this sharing, give all credit and all praises to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Absolutely.
I would like to share about executive functioning, and there's so much to share as it relates to executive functioning, and how there's so much to share. I'm going to start with a story, sharing a story that was a true story that happened recently this week on Facebook. And we're going to speak to executive functioning and demonstrate some areas that, and some cultural areas, and some, there's just many different areas where we can see a problem in executive functioning, if you will. And it's something that we don't even recognize. Most of us don't even recognize, and I'm going to share some of the comments as it relates related to this story. So recently, this week, there was a five-year-old boy who was in school and in kindergarten class. So kindergarten class is, of course, the first class that children go to. And the five-year-old boy, he's in kindergarten class, and he's having a behavioral outburst just after lunch. He threw a clipboard at another student. He then threw, after the clipboard attack, he threw the clipboard down the stairs or at a teacher. The school administrator saw the boy running away. He left the campus of the school, noticed that he was headed toward some kind of congested area, so he called the administrator called the police. Two officers showed up. About one block away, they found a boy. His name was Kevin. He was hiding near a car. The officer was polite at first. He was like, come here, buddy, come here, very approaching him. And the boy did not respond. He became very unpleasant, saying, don't look at me. And the officer says, why are you not in school? He says to him, why are you not in school? The boy still is irate. He did not move. So then the officer named Kevin, he grabbed his arm, pulled him to the patrol car, and the boy kept repeating no, and he started crying. He said, no, no. And the assistant principal finally arrived on the scene to calm the boy down. Kevin walked the boy to the patrol car, put him in the back seat, fastened his seatbelt,
The boy said, I don't want to go. The officer responded, I don't care. You don't make decisions for yourself, quote unquote. The officer drove him back to the school. The principal followed them as well. During the drive, the officer suggested to the assistant principal that he could not have engaged in that behavior when he was younger. He would have been beat at that time. He could have never behaved that way at that age, or he would have been beat. He initially refused to get out of the backseat when they arrived at school. The assistant principal ended up escorting the boy back inside. The officer lifted the boy up and placed him harshly into a chair after the boy refused to sit down. So he picked the boy up, the five-year-old. Remember, we're talking about a five-year-old kindergarten. And as a police officer, probably average-sized male, if you will, he picks him up and he forces him to sit down. The boy continued to scream and cry. The principal moved her face mask. Second officer, it's a female. She removed her face mask. She got into the boy's face, and she screamed 5 times at him. And the way the scream was described was something feral, as though she was a wild animal. That's how it was described, that it was wild. And she screamed directly into his face 5 times, words that were such to I would beat you, your mom should beat you, just things like that. She was saying to him, she was telling him. So the mother finally arrives, and they say to her, you need to beat him. And so the mother says very calmly, in this story, she never gets outraged. She doesn't show any emotions one way or the other. She's engaged, yet she's calm. And she says, she does not beat him because she's afraid that someone would take her children. Mind you, the mother is talking to police enforcement and administrators at her school about her son's behavior. So the last thing she's going to say is, yes, I beat my son, because at this point I would be thinking, this is crazy. I don't even know where to go with my thoughts about this. But that's me speculating. But anyway, she remained calm. She said she doesn't beat him. And then they begin to say to her, yes, you can beat him. You can beat him as long as you don't leave any marks or do anything like burn him or anything like that. And so somehow a phone gets in the way, I think one of the officers had a phone, or the administrator, and the boy made a gesture as if he was going to push the phone out of his face. And so then the words were, I wish you would. So there's in that a threat, I wish you would. So then we know what that means, I wish you would. The officer held the boy down in the chair. He's still crying. He's still upset. And later he would admit that this wasn't an appropriate thing to say, that he should be beat. He thinks his actions were inappropriate. And because the boy was non-compliant, the other officer talked about how the boy, and she's the one that suggested that he's acting like a little beast, called him this in his face, claimed that he's acting like he should be in a crate. You should put him in a crate like an animal. The officer had stopped yelling at him, but the boy's mother complained that she couldn't even discipline him that way. Physical discipline, she doesn't, do that because, we want you to beat him is what they said. We want you to beat him. And, wow, so this principal, we're talking again about a five-year-old in kindergarten. So in kindergarten, this is his first time probably being at school, being away from something that's familiar. And she couldn't beat him. She didn't want to go to the prison. The officers assured her that beating her child is not going to send her to prison in this county. So, they went from, they then took the conversation to another room, and they began to continue to talk about or encourage her to beat her son, to discipline him, to get him disciplined. The problem they thought was that he wasn't disciplined, and the answer was that he should be beat. the young man, it came about that the boy was in the room while they were having this conversation. The mother continued to talk about her frustrations and disciplining her son, and including how hard it is to be a parent because, you know, what she thinks would be discipline would get her children taken away. So someone says, all I can say is that you need to beat him. And I don't want to read much more, but that's really it in a nutshell for the sake of time. And I want to, where do I begin? The comments. Okay, so because this is very, very important to what we're going to discuss today and what we're going to talk about when we talk about the culture as it relates to the evolving the mind or growing the mind or developing in the mind. It's this in the language that we use and how we deal with the mind development, the mind's development, if you will. And so the one comment, let's see, it's the first comment. Well, that's my comment. Let's see. Someone did say things have to change. I too got beat. I ended up at the police station, and it didn't end well for me. That he ended up in foster care and he continued to get beat, if you will. That started. Wait, I want to, frustration. Okay, kids need that. Kid needs professional help. I want to read the one that was very, very. There's a young lady, Barbara Moss Brantley. We've been going back and forth, and she says, because what ended up happening is after this situation happened, the mother sued the government, state government, and she sued the school district, and he was awarded $275,000. So her comment was, he was paid for acting a fool. That kid needs a strong hand with him 5 years from now. See if he's not doing worse. And so my comment to her was, decolonize yourself. He's a human being, and we're free now. No need to beat our children to raise them. So, where is that important message? Most people do acknowledge that there is an issue here. Most of the people are, even the commenter, as I look for the message, I thought it was queued up, but forgive me. They spoke of their disappointment in the police officer's actions at yelling at a five-year-old. They spoke of this, you know, there was no way to behave. They were using excessive force. They were lacking in compassion, didn't meet him or meet his needs. Very few people focus on the fact that we have a five-year-old boy who's in kindergarten who is having an emotional breakdown just after lunch. Not once is it mentioned that they even assessed were his basic needs met, meaning did he eat lunch, meaning is he hungry or is he tired? When children at that age get tired and they don't have the skills to regulate their emotions, they devolve into monsters. That's not my child, your child, their child. It's every child. When they are exhausted, they devolve into little monsters. That was not even mentioned. That wasn't even addressed. That could he be tired? Could he be overwhelmed? And then we have two officers that handle him roughly, and then they, you know, shake him up a little. Their intentions may have been good, meaning with all they had on in their arsenal of skills were discipline is required, it worked for me, yada, yada, yada. That kind of discipline is obviously not working. And looking and the reason why it's not working, it's not an opinion, it's the factual that this isn't working. Number one, because the mind is not designed to operate that way in thinking. Well, if you want a child to think and make decisions and not respond impulsively, you have to provide the environment and demonstrate what that looks like. We come here knowing how to survive. That boy was doing what he knew how to do to survive a situation he was afraid in. He was not using anything, any executive functioning. Number one, he's five. He doesn't know how to do that. That has to be taught. He doesn't know how to control his impulses, control his emotions, effectively communicate, see things for what they are, and not respond or not react to how you're feeling. No one addressed, it was not mentioned anywhere of how what's going on. There was no mention of an assessment of what's going on. There was just a judgment that he was bad, misbehaving, and he needed to be beat into submission. From what we learned in the teachings that I've done on my show and on this platform, I will say this. We are learning the truth of the matter and trying to understand how to move forward on learning how to engage on a sociological level. So the truth of the matter is the formula given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is we start with the science of a thing, then we go to the psychology, then the philosophy, then the sociology, and from there comes the morality. If you start on the morality, you're not starting on the right foundation, and you are more likely to err in judgment because you're just lacking in the basic requirements for understanding. So the basic biology is when you are afraid, your brain shuts down the area that thinks, which is responsible for executive functioning, and it drives all the energy to what to do impulsively to survive right now, because fear means now, 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 now. It doesn't mean wait. It doesn't mean rest. It doesn't mean stop and think. So can you imagine how the boy was afraid? You're in kindergarten. It's not even a month that the children are in school, and you're around strangers who should your mother entrusted to care for you and not harm you. This boy was traumatized by this. And this trauma is going to be very difficult for him to heal away, because at that age, trauma, when that happens, is embedded in the muscles and in every part of him. And he doesn't have the words to work it out, because he didn't have the words to describe how it got there. He doesn't have the words. He doesn't know. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm starting to see the picture a little clearer. You know, I had forgotten that the public school system is just starting again from summer vacation. And that's a factor, you know, separation anxiety, you know, those kinds of things are real. I want to let you know we've got two callers patiently waiting. I want you to put enough on the table for the audience to be able to see the focus that you're coming in with this narrative that you're sharing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna. So you're saying to go ahead and share more, and then we'll take the callers.
That's what I'm inviting you to determine if you need to put a little bit more on the table, or you want to open.
Callers might want to say for now, since they are patiently waiting, and I appreciate your opinions. I've got more to share, and I think I've shared enough for us to be on the same page with our engagement. So let's take
a... I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said let's go ahead and take our first callers, inshallah.
That's it. All right. Both of these callers we're familiar with. Imam Kareem Hamid, welcome.
Yes. Wa alaikum assalam. I am Kareem Hamid, calling in from St. Louis, Missouri. And I want to thank Sister Lou Princess Aziz for sharing a an illustration of the dysfunction in most human beings in executive thinking. You know, the story that you laid out, my mind went to the motive of the counselor, teachers, and the police officer insisting that this child's mother beat him. I believe that that was coming from a place inside of them called revenge. Revenge. That he should be physically assaulted because they could not control or overpower him. And we know with law enforcement, they're of the mindset of, we bring the hurt. We bring the hurt. So they're insisting on the mother physically assaulting her child, I believe was coming from that motive, that disappointment of not being able to control and overpower. I'll stop right there, but that's where my mind went. Thank you, Blue Princess Aziz.
Thank you. This is Mohsen Abdul Salam. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum. Your phone's on mute. Your mic is open. Alaikum assalam.
I tuned in tonight. Greetings to you and Mr. Princess Aziz. Program. So I was kind of puzzled when I heard you narrating the account of the maltreatment child. And the question I have is what was the purpose of you sharing that with your listening audience? What was the goal of your discussion around that?
Okay, so the purpose, you did say that you tuned in late, I think.
Yes,
so the purpose, Well, the purpose was, we've been talking about executive functioning in the past weeks and how important it is to, what the importance of executive functioning is and what does it look like when the child develops outside of the environment that promotes executive functioning. And that story I shared because it reminded me of how a child's growth and development in executive functioning is stunted. And then it's stunted by the traditional way that we have come to find acceptable in disciplining our children, that we, without being aware, have been stunting the growth and development of our children because we've not grown in that area. We've not either graduated from practices that do not serve us and have never served us. So that way of disciplining using corporal punishment does not serve us. It has never served us, and it will never serve us because of the way that the brain is designed to operate. When you subdue a child under fear, you produce a child or a human being that will be compliant. You will not produce a human being that has the skills to control impulses because that's not what compliance produces. Compliance produces submission. And so that's not what Allah wants from us. Allah wants us to be critical thinking human beings which is I'm also learning this, the God connection in executive functioning. There's something there in a part of your brain when it's functioning properly. You can find yourself in Allah easily, and Allah can find you. There's an easy path there when everything's functioning right or functioning appropriately. That would be simply in a nutshell the reason why I shared it. Just to give a demonstration of how and to become more aware of the importance of executive functioning and our responsibility and, you know, our purpose, our reason, our responsibility to be accountable. So to learn, basically, and to grow.
Yes. You know, we have an environment now. We've had it for a considerable amount of time now. That's full of violence, and the use of violence to maintain control, dominance. And in that environment, the type of self-control, self-management, the type of behavior that will allow a child to get the benefit of knowledge in mm-hmm. an educational environment. It's because there's a resistance within this environment of violence and control. There, you know, all people don't respond the same way to threat and to physical contact or corporal punishment. You know, some children, and you particularly find it within boys, that there is within the nature of young boys, you know, this, well, you're not going to make me cry, you know, maintaining control over themselves in the face of corporal punishment and even resistance, you know, even resistance. There's a lot here, and what we are and what you are doing, Luke Francis, is unfolding the human makeup, unfolding how negatively affected these behaviors in parenting and in the teaching environment that I'll put it this way, that are damaging. And I'll stop there. And the callers, two callers, please press 1 to go out of the queue. And, you know, if you have another comment, you know, we'll open up your mic. And we've got Mahasan.
Yeah.
You have another comment?
Yes, I did. But somehow someone turned my volume off. And so
I didn't turn the volume off. I just muted you.
Okay, but it sort of incompleted my question to Sister Princess.
Well, I had I didn't have an idea. Pardon me.
Oh, okay, 'cause I was expecting to dialogue with her because of the intense concern I had in listening to the narrative that she was sharing about a 5-year-old child and the discussion, as she was saying, centered around the assessment of a child that age having the capacity for executive function.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So, number one, I'm very, if I can respond, I'm very distressed with what I heard. And I'm not so sure. In fact, I am sure that in terms of early childhood development, there is not an appropriate relevance in discussing the capacity for executive function in a child that age. A very stressful and traumatic experience of that child, very inappropriate for the adults who conducted it. And the entire situation that you describe seemed highly, highly inappropriate and even criminal to an extent. And I can't imagine trying to have a rational conversation about an experience that a five-year-old was put through, as I heard. The other question I have, I know it's about 8:30, so did I get in the right program? Is Brother Michael co-hosting with you tonight?
No, this is just home. And this is not just talk, 8 o'clock beginning at 8, from 8 until 9:30. But what we've established that we're going to regularly have Lou Princess Aziz, the co-host of, the host of Keeping It Real, we're going to be inviting her to come on a regular basis, maybe every other week or so. And we were unable to have her on last week, so we're bringing her on this week. And excuse me. So that's going to be the focus. And I'd like to say that oftentimes in dealing with the early childhood development in terms of parenting or caregiving, the child's development, mental development at that age is limited. The brain hasn't even matured to be able to get its head around a number of things. And at that age, you know, the child is particularly.
I was concerned because I didn't think that the focus of this discussion, given the trauma that was shared, had anything to do really with assessment of childhood development, but criminal behavior from the adults who were involved. I wasn't listening when you began to describe how such an experience was charted, began for this five-year-old. So I don't have the information of it, but the focus of discussion, I would like to say, I don't believe is appropriate in terms of the child's early childhood behavior, but how this situation was set up and occurred that had the principal and the police officer, and even in the incapacity of the parent, and how they were treated was a better focus on the wrongdoing. So I'm going to step away. Go ahead.
I appreciate that. And as you were speaking, I was thinking how we've been learning about mental health maintenance commitments for some time on the shows that I've been airing on, and some childhood trauma is a place that will stunt your growth for the rest of your life. And as we were learning about executive functioning and how that develops in the human being, childhood function is one of the places that stunts that development. Because to put it simply, energy needs to go to that area, meaning that those pathways have to be developed over time, the environment, the consistency and seeing adults function executively, so forth and so on. My reasoning for using this is that there is a systemic issue that we do need to be truthful about as it relates to our children having a safe environment to develop their functions executively. There is something there that, and then there's something in the way the adults demonstrate that they function executively. There's an issue there. And then it also demonstrates our response to the behavior and what we think the discipline is. And so all of that, from their reaction, the trauma they caused that young boy, I cannot imagine. I believe that much trauma is going to take him years to unlayer. Because when he received it at five, and the way that he received it, I cannot see it doing anything else but shutting him down in some areas, especially if it relates to trusting adults, trusting those that you should get information from and guidance and leadership from. So you might have spiritually and emotionally orphaned this little boy. He may never trust another adult, and in distrust comes a whole lot of other things. But most importantly, that those things that are birthed from this situation that he experienced will shunt his growth and development and executive functioning. He's supposed to be learning that now because we don't come here knowing that. He knows how to survive. You saw him, well, it was demonstrated in the story, him working to survive, just throwing things, reacting to his emotions. That's a survival mode. You're not thinking, you're not processing. That comes later. But I'm demonstrating where authority, grown-ups, teachers, this also goes back to, you know, how the enemy works in every level to keep us as human beings down. But I was also wanting to demonstrate that we have accountability, and we need to, as we reconstruct parenting, the pillar or the support beam of discipline needs to be reevaluated, how we see it, what it is, and how we demonstrate it. And the current use of corporal punishment, as these people suggested on this comment feed, it does not produce the results that they hope. It will produce a worker who is compliant. It will not produce a thinker who is an evolved human being. And that's the reason why I chose this, because many, again, the stigmatism, we're doing assessments of mental health. It needs to be regular, not at a point where, okay, what's your question?
It may not be a discussion. One moment.
Mahasan, one moment. Gone past time that we interject our public service announcements, and we're going to take a break.
Okay, you want me to wait until after the public service? Sure, I'll hold on.
So, dear listeners, we'll be back after these messages.
Peace be with you, and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid, and instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitzer as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you, and have a pleasant day.
Assalamu alaikum. Join us each and every Sunday from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time and 4 to 6 Central Standard Time for the broadcast of the contemplations of Imam Wahiduddin Muhammad, sharing his insights, his wisdom, and his knowledge here on America Muslim 360, utilizing the books edited by Brother Morocco, Brother Ghani, and Brother Ronald B. Shaheed. So we look forward to your presence as we share the insight, the logic, and the thinking of our beloved Imam Wahiduddin Muhammad here on America Muslim 360 on a myriad of subject matter. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
And we're back with more of Not Just Talk on AM360.org. Our guest this evening is Lou Princess Aziz, host of Keeping It Real. The time of airing of her program is 4 o'clock Eastern on Sunday afternoons. And we have made an agreement that we're going to have her come back as a regular guest. When we opened up this evening, we were sharing that there's so much that everyday men and women don't know about the inner life, the life of the soul, the life, you know, the psychology of the individual. And so with this focus on executive function, you know, what the intent is to have better parenting, better adult supervision, to have a healthier future for our children and for ourselves by understanding how Almighty God, Allah, has made up the human being. And he didn't make any junk, you know. It's just the fact that in the absence of knowledge and reasoning, we have these situations that are criminal, you know, that abuse that took place in that description, that narrative that Lou Princess shared. It was criminal, and she mentioned that the mother went to court and was avoided an amount of money that what do you call that? I'm sorry, my mind is racing to try to be succinct. A judgment
yes.
was given to the mother for the criminal and abusive behavior heaped upon the child. And the Mahasan, you're back. Your line is open. And if you wanted to continue to share, please continue.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum.
The focus of concern, given the information was limited, as I say, I came in sort of in the middle. I didn't hear let me finish. I didn't hear what I would have accounted as a trigger for that situation or certainly. I had no idea what triggered that situation. So as a listener, I'm kind of limited at having a full understanding to make an appropriate assessment as to what was needed. But in my mind, I'm not thinking this is so much, since you're talking about children and imprinting of behaviors and mentalities, the capacities of children of that age. They need to be much older and have matured at a higher level before we even have the expectation of executive functioning. And,
yeah, well, that's the narrative. The narrative, as I stated.
Can I finish?
Let me add some.
You probably
just one moment. One moment. Just one moment. Let me manage this, please.
I'm going to hang up now, but I'll be in touch with you for the discussion.
Lou Princess.
Oh, wow. Hello, I'm here.
Lou Princess.
I'm here. Can
you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Let me just say this. I handled the situation because I was attempting to add to again and to repeat what was left out, what she was not understanding in terms of the narrative, why the narrative was presented as it was. But there was an issue. There was a background issue in terms of her calling me on the phone to get into the queue. And, I prefer to manage the program myself and not have the audience.
I apologize.
No, I understand. No, I understand. It's what you didn't know. So I don't answer the phone from callers that are trying to get in. She came in late, so she had no idea in terms of what the real focus was. And again, this is not just talk hosted by Michael Hami, and I didn't appreciate, you know, the way she was attempting to interact with me. And so that's that. We're going to bring Imam Kareem in to share.
Okay, if I could, well, she's not listening. I guess address what some of the concerns that she raised and the questions I was going to ask you. But go ahead and bring in Ma'am Kareem. With all due respect, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and we've got a half an hour plus. You know, we've got grace time, so we're going to take our time with this, but we're gonna do it, you know, respectfully. All right, Imam Kareem.
Yes. Alhamdulillah, praise be to Almighty God, Allah. Allah is the best knower. Praise be to Allah. Princess Aziz, you mentioned something that was earlier. I believe that is very key, very keen. How to instill executive thinking in our youth, in our young children, beginning at the earliest age, their brains may not have been totally formed yet. But we could aid to that process. You know, most parents think of raising children. They think of the outside, the exterior of the child. But the most important part to nurture and maintain is the soul of that child. What would negatively affect the soul of this child? What will add benefit? Because that is what we are dealing with here. We may see a cute material presence, but that is a soul that we've been entrusted with. And the environment is very important. What we introduce is very important to that soul. So our raising of our children, it has to go beyond just the exterior. And we know exactly what we've been entrusted with and how to nurture, praise be to Allah, how to nurture that soul forward to being a fully developed human being. The process, I believe, should begin immediately, day one. I'll stop right here. Thank you to you and Mohammed. What a wonderful broadcast. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. If I could respond, Michael Hameen. Hello? I think we have an audio. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I
just wanted to
know. Try to reach you, ma'am, to press one to go out of the queue. I had my phone muted. Pardon me. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Wanted to respond to the last and then I'll give some response to what the sister said earlier. I appreciate the reiteration of the soul. It's our responsibility to develop it, to facilitate the development of not just their physical being, but their spiritual and their soul. And again, the reason why I use that particular thing for example, is because it's not isolated. The behavior and the thought of those adults, that thought mindset of the adults, is generational childhood abuse or generational injuries or whatever the term we would like to use. But that's how the enemy gets us to pass on generational trauma to our children to stunt their growth executively. And the soulful part that the imam spoke about, I'm also learning that there's a spiritual factor or a God factor in the executive functioning. It's you can't even see Allah the way you should see him and appreciate who you are as a human being. There's something there when you function, when you're functioning executively, you're able to discover some things and see some things and conceive some things that you cannot do if you're functioning out of a place of fear, and demonstrating how we stunt our children's growth, how the administration does it, how the government does it, how policies and procedures do it. We have a big war on our hand and reconstructing parenting and getting our children to be raised and reared as disciplined human beings, self-disciplined. And another thing is I'm pointing out is the adults first need to parent themselves properly. They demonstrate in this story, in this happening, it's not a story, it happened this week, they demonstrate a lack of executive functioning as well. They're adults. They should have the assessment of the child. We didn't do an assessment of his executive functioning. The assessment of his physical needs is what I spoke of. Is he hungry? Does he need a nap? He's 5 years old in kindergarten. It was not reported as happening. So we skip past addressing his physical needs and expecting him to function in a way, number one, he's learning how to function in a way where he controls his emotions, controls his impulses, and this is his first time in school. So traumatized this man, this boy who could have grown, I won't say bad words, but he has the potential to grow up to be a properly functioning human being. I'm just demonstrating that this particular giving of discipline is damaging our children, and they're getting the damage everywhere. They're getting it from us because we believe in corporal punishment. They're getting it at school and authority and at authority. Where do they have a place where they can practice these skills, and where do they see these skills being practiced? I don't have, the mother in the story was the only one who had impulse control because she didn't go off. She said what she had to say eloquently, and she filed whatever paperwork she needed to file, and she was heard. She was not a parent that went off. She was not a parent that was treated like an animal. She spoke. She had representation. She spoke her position, and she was respected. So there's also something else that may be going on with the little boy. But the impulse control, it could have been easily resolved by saying, hey, lay your head down on the table or go lay down, as opposed to these. Another thing, triggers happened. These adults were triggered. And you can tell they were triggered by their reaction. You are not responding as an adult. And you're not executive. You're not demonstrating executive functions when you pull your mask down and you get in the 5-year-old's face and you scream to the top of your lungs in his face five times, and then invite him with the threat. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you know that that behavior went beyond the policing function, you know, the protect and serve function. They were getting into parenting, and I could see why the court gave the judgment to the mother, because what they were doing, speaking of the police now, was criminal. You know, that is not, that is, they went above and beyond the type of behavior that they're being paid for. And as you were sharing that, I was thinking that, you know, I've heard a number of remarks over the last few months in terms of the police having a longer training period, you know, in terms of them qualifying to become policemen and policewomen on the streets, quote unquote, protecting and serving, you know.
They should be recertified. They should do relearning every year. If nurses do it, doctors do it, lawyers do it, I think, I don't know. But, and even teachers, we have to do things to keep our certificate. So they should have education
right.
Well. I'm sorry that we lost the sister. I really wanted to get her, viewpoint in light of of everything.
It bordered on micromanaging in terms of the way I looked at it, because I got a phone call from her while we were on the air, you know, while she and Imam Kareem were waiting to be brought in. And I'm only mentioning it to be clearer in terms of I have to be in control in terms of managing how this program is going to proceed. You know, otherwise it's going to be problematic, you know. So, but I also, and I think you mentioned it, there's a psychological thing with children, the separation response, you know, you feel like you're being, I can't think of the language now, but, you know, the child anxiety in terms of, you know, being in a new environment, the parent is not there to, you know, to explain what's going on. And lastly, personally, I remember kindergarten. I was about four because I was in school. My birthday was earlier before the school started. And so I started around four, and I failed NAP. You know, I was not a good taker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll continue, this is a subject. And again, this, we know that the child, you know, the actual brain that we utilize well past the late teen years before it's fully developed. So the executive function primarily, we're exposing this information to parents and caretakers and others that are going to be interacting with children, understanding how children function and how that executive function is within them. But more importantly, the adults understanding how we operate internally, you know.
Right. So if I learn how to function, if I assess my own executive function, and I know and I'm learning how my brain is working, how it should be working, and what happens. Here's one thing. Let me finish that thought. As I learn how my brain should function, what has happened is that my compassion has increased, because I no longer look at the action or the person as the action. I can now see where there may be some struggling, and there should be an update in the program, if you will, using that metaphor, if you will. We can address the program here. We can address the operating system here. Compare, you know, the analogy of the brain and as a computer, if you will. We can address it from the science of the matter and not address it, jump to the sociology of the matter before dealing with the science of the matter. How does the brain operate? Have we assessed, have we dealt with things on the biological first, or the science of the matter, and with all truths considered? He's five, first time away from mom. And based on what I got from the mother, she's calm and she's collected because she let them hang themselves. She spoke in a way that got them to say, no, you should beat him. She says, oh, I don't want him. I don't think that I could beat him. They kept saying, yes, you can beat him. You can do this, this, that, and the other. She did not get out of line. She did not lose her cool. She just said, okay, thanks for the advice, and went and filed the lawsuit. That's what she did. So the child not having discipline at home, he's probably has an example of discipline. His mother demonstrated discipline. I don't think this was an issue of discipline. I think this was an issue of the child was overwhelmed by being in school. He may have needed a nap, I would say, based on the behavior demonstrated. He absolutely needed a nap, and that would have prevented all of this, starting with the truth of the matter, addressing the biology basic before you get to trying to, you know, figure out some psychological thing. Look at the biology. Has he been fed? Is he safe? You know, do that before you use your triggers to get this little boy in line. It's simple bullying. The entire team bullied the boy. And I see this escalated. It's reported that this kind of aggression is escalated logarithmically since the threat of COVID. This is everywhere. Yes. Our children are getting it, and we're not there to help them through what they are experiencing. We don't have the words. They don't have the words. That five-year-old is going to take, a lot of years of therapy because he's got an experience. He doesn't have words to explain. When he does get words, his mind won't remember those words can be used to explain that experience. So it's just,
if the mother is cognizant of how serious that episode was, counseling for her and the child might be appropriate, you know, to aid in that. The human soul is very resilient, you know, and we're different as souls. I remember the 9/11 tragedy. There were individuals that were very distant from the 9/11 towers falling, and they were just unhinged. It really affected them in a way that they couldn't function properly. And then there were those who were right there in the heart of the tragedy, were more composed, and they were better. You know, we're different in terms of our ability to tolerate certain things. That's the beauty of, you know, the human family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have different capacities, you know, in various areas. And so dealing with trauma is something that, you know, it's not something that is across the board in terms of its effect on the human being. It's not, it doesn't express itself, but
mm-hmm.
it's there, it's a reality, and oftentimes having professional help or a listener who can help the person process the situation. It's not necessarily have to be, they don't have to be a clinician, but just someone who understands themselves and the human being experience, you know?
Right. If I could go a little more on explaining how significant impulse control is to executive functioning, it's not just you think a thought and you say, no, I'm not going to do that. Or it's not just refraining from gambling or doing drugs or not chattering. Impulse control is that part that's really needed in order for you to get into your purpose. You can't plan, meet a goal, or even see a goal being met if impulse control isn't running. That there, if that part isn't running, nothing else behind it will ever be activated. Your purpose will never come to you. You'll never stop to even think and how to categorize stimuli coming in, or how to put things together so they're in your benefit. the impulsivity is more than just emotional control, because that goes to what it looks like when you don't see a little boy throwing trays. A young lady could also be demonstrating impulse control, and she looks a completely different way. She looks a different way. But our response is always to say, still the same. We want to discipline the child in a way that's not effective or appropriate. And that's what I want to help us to become more aware of the baseline science of the matter, so that we can be effective when we get out to the fourth level of the sociology. If you start with the sociology and you miss the understanding of the biology, you are subject to grave errors. Grave errors. Case in point, the symbolism of male and female and the man and woman. If we start with the science of the matter on how things operate, we won't be at a sociological level saying that women need to be subdued by men, or females need to be subdued by males. We will never get that thought, would never be a part of our sociology if we understand the biology of the thing. It will not be a misunderstanding of how things operate, by why things operate, if we understand how they operate, if that makes sense. We do have a caller, and I can stop right here. I just wanted to share that, why I want to start at the biology. Biology is going to get you the truth of the matter, so there's no argument with biology. I'll stop right there.
Yes, we're going to bring, that looks like Martha Nyla, Executive Director of CWSC, Community Wide Shura Conference. Before we bring her in, I just want to mention that the narratives that Almighty God lays out, and it's the explanation that men and women are created from one soul. We may have different functions, but they're equal in terms of their sociological functions, in terms of the way that society has moved forward from times of hunter-gatherer up to the 21st century. You know, there are certain aspects that we should, on your program, in terms of baseline attributes that Almighty God has given the woman, the female, and the baseline attributes that God has given the male. And there are some sociological things coming out of religion that make a lot of problems for relationships, and these things have to be addressed in an intelligent manner. It's like Satan causes a problem, and then he says, "Let me give you some sincere advice on how to straighten it out," and it becomes more problematic.
Yeah.
We're gonna bring Martha Nyla in. Welcome. I believe this is Sister Martha Nyla. State your name and where you're calling from.
Martha Nyla, I have to let Kali from Florida, St. Petersburg specifically, and St. Petersburg, Clearwater area. I'm so thankful, and greetings of peace to both of you and to our listening audience. Praise be to Almighty God. This is a moment-by-moment discussion that we just have to. You know, the yesterday has occurred so unpleasantly for all of humanity. And I said, you know, where there's been abuse, where there's been miscalculation on being human and not being human, and all of the application of that, of the whole outcome, the outcome of those applications in an abused way. And I'm saying it that way intentionally because the more I give thought to, all right, when I'm ready to prepare my meal, and I think of what I want, and then a menu is I have to do a menu plan or something with some kind of ingredients or something. And then mm-hmm. I know if I make bread versus sweet, something sweet, then there's one ingredient that's not going to be in one of them, or one is going to be in the other that doesn't have. So sugar will be in one that, you know, of more of a quantity, I should say. So now I'm using that bread cake or bread sweet comparison to, as Michael, you were just referring to, the male and the female. But then we go back to where do we connect relationship-wise words to the matter.
Mm-hmm.
And those words even have a relationship in their content. You know, I'm just going to indicate this and leave it right there because there's much thought that can be given to it. But when we hear the word there, T-H-E-I-R, and there, T-H-E-R-E, and then there, T-H-E-Y-R-E, when we look at it, we know those letters have a relationship, but they also have a meaning when we look at them, and they sound alike. Well, when we're expecting, or as I grew up, you know, and if I compare my life growing up with somebody else's, mine was a two-parent household. And so, of course, when my father transitioned, I didn't expect another father. You know what I mean? Those processes that I had gotten in there, and I didn't have anything to say compare another household with mine. But I mm-hmm. grew up with whatever was considered quote-unquote value. Now, at the same time, I was given this image, as Michael said, in religion, that worked against my adult life in me. I'm coming up with this expectation that all the mythological sayings or whatever I say, but saying don't look a person in the eye and don't and da, 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 and you expect that there's another race of people that's better. So I'm dealing with that, and at the same time I'm told you can be whatever you want to be, and then I'm complex when I realize barriers. Period, and I'm wondering where is it coming from. Well, it's coming from back to the words. Words, and we call them policies. Words, they're still words, and what those words mean. So I'll stop right there.
Exactly.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Sister Lou Francis?
Wow, she didn't miss a beat on that. I heard everything you said, Sister Martha. I did, and it was wow. Yes, all those things, and I'm there with you. I, that same thing I'm dealing with, and the same thing of trying a thing, and wow, I can't trust everything. I have to try everything, which is a great thing because I'm wired to do that. So I'm into trying everything, like, and I'm testing everything, and that was put in me, and making sure that it's grounded in truth, and not just accept it, which I think is a kind of an Abrahamic moment when you're like, testing everything. Is this part of you? Is this part of you? Is this true? Is this true? And then that begins the dialogue. However, that evolution won't happen for the person whose growth is stunted by childhood trauma. They will not even be able to conceive themselves as someone who was blessed by Allah, made by Allah, and given authority and power by Allah. That's the thing. You won't have to tell someone who's functioning optimally, executively, that they are created by the greatest. That's something that's already put into the human being that's going to be activated when the energy turns the light on in that part of the brain. Another thing I wanted to say, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I write it down.
In terms of very, very quickly, we are a human family that has been brought into the world by the creator of life. And those who, to whatever degree, acknowledge the creator and his bringing us into being, the invitation is there to ask for help in navigating these oftentimes complex life circumstances. And those that don't have that kind of grounding, in my opinion, it's more difficult. You know, I don't know. Lord, what do I need to know? You know, what am I missing? You know, what am I missing? And just by virtue of that, going outside of myself, not depending totally on myself for the navigation of life and through life, it makes, in my opinion, a great difference.
Right. That's show me. Show me a lot. All those things, those two words I learned that have just been, a game changer. I got a new life with those words. Show me a lot.
Yeah.
And show me everything because I don't know anything. Yeah, the things I began to be, that the Lord is beginning to show me I thought I knew. I thought I knew what man meant and what woman meant, or even child. Child, I've been shown, and I'll share this, those emotions generated from experiences are your children. Emotions generated from it that you get from children, from experiences are your children. So now in reading scriptures about children and on that level where you're seeing things in the allegory or you're looking at the message of the meaning of the message in the unseen realm and not in the physical realm, because what is explained in the physical doesn't make sense in the biological. So we have to adjust our understanding on the sociological level back to the biological level, if that makes sense. I don't want to go further in that, but I just wanted to share that you began, shown what these images, the symbols mean. So then I'm freed from the bondage of being controlled by religion, controlled by misunderstandings. I'm clearing those understandings up. And then another thing, this walk is personal. I can teach my children that they're going to go on a walk with Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, by themselves. And I won't be there to help them. I might be there, I don't know, but when you're there with Allah, you know, it's you and Allah. He will ask you to leave your mother and your husband and your children outside. That's my experience. So what they think what your imam thought, you got to leave all that outside. That's the transparency I want us to have in parenting with our children as we walk and develop spiritually. What does that look like? And how we should demonstrate to our children to be vulnerable enough to say that I make mistakes and this is what that is. That sin is not what we think it is. It's not an indication of you as a person. It's an indication that there's something, there's a deviation there. There's a deviation in energy. There's something that needs, energy is going somewhere else in your brain. Now, I would feel better if that was my learning about my behavior as opposed to I need to behave a certain way so that I look a certain way. But I'm learning that I'm behaving a certain way so that I can activate more of my brain and hear more of what Allah has for me to hear. That's a different perspective.
And with that, we're going to take this last public service announcement breaks, and we'll be back with more of Not Just Talk on AM360.org. Our guest is Blue Princess Aziz, host of Keeping It Real, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern.
The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in Islam. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims that have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad radiallahu anhu, and we all explain its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum.
God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins with the seed. Rain International is world leader in seed nutrition and the first to market seed-based products. Our flagship product is called Soul, S-O-U-L. The main ingredient is the black cumin seed. Here are a few reasons to drink Soul. Supports the healthy immune system. Give the body the boost to stay healthy and strong. Improve indigestion. Decrease infection. Remove inflammation and other benefits. This is an opportunity to improve your health and increase your wealth. Please call or text me at 914-434-375. Please join me in supporting CWSC, the Community-Wide Sewer Conference and AM360, in remaking the world into a better place. We support the 50-year human family planning and look forward to doing business with you. Our website is raininternational.com. We are available at any time. Please call this number, 914-434-3275. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Join me, Latifa A. Hamid, and Alia Abdul-Rahman every Friday for another segment of the CWSC Friday Roundtable from 8 a.m. to 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our guests are partners of the CWSC Model Community National Resource Directory and are making a difference in the community. Join us. We look forward to it. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
And we're back with more of Master's Talk. If you're just tuning in, you've just about missed the program, Not Just Talk, with our guest this evening, Luke Francis Aziz, host of Keeping It Real. Luke Francis?
Yes, sir. I wanted to have 1 minute, I think. How much more time? What, 2 minutes? I just want to thank you for inviting me to be a guest.
We've got great periods that we want to take advantage of this evening. So we've got more than a minute. We've got at least 15 minutes. Yes, ma'am.
Great,
so
great.
This process that we're dealing with, that you deal with on your program, Keeping It Real, on Sunday afternoon, and my intention is to expand this conversation by having you as a returning guest on Not Just Talk, because it's vitally important. I had the experience of a course in early childhood development, and I've shared this with you and with the audience on other occasions, the fact, the importance of environment. There was a child that was being you can't really call it parenting. They were being managed by a parent that was unstable, and abusive. Kept the child in the basement, would beat the child. I can't think of the young man's name who wrote a book about his experiences. A Child Called It, I believe, is the name of the book. Can't think of the author who experienced this physical abuse. And he got to where he would make moves when he was about to be struck. He would make moves like the moves of, the stunt men and women, you know, how they anticipate a punch and they go with it, that sort of thing. This is what he learned how to do in terms of the oppressive, the abusive, physically abusive environment. But this one case study, the individual was freed. The outside found out about his abusive environment, and he was taken away from the parent. And initially, the initial assessment was that this child was retarded until that child was put into a nurturing environment and that humanity came out, you know. But the environment of being locked up
you know, treated worse than an animal, had its effect. But the counter effect was in him being nurtured to a point where his humanity blossomed. And this is important for us to understand. And a lot of us have no idea of the dark side of this life, that there are people that it's like a hatred of innocence, and they will abuse innocence in all kinds of ways, you know. So what we're doing is very, in my opinion, vitally important in sharing how we operate on the inside. And the difference between, I like the way that you use the abstract language, or you know, the metaphors and so forth being explained, you know, in terms of what that means. You know, there's language like archetypes, you know, and we've had introduced to us through Imam Muhammad that these prophets are archetypes of varying aspects of our humanity. And that language, Allah says in the Quran that the surface is an illusion or is a deception. If we are listening to language that is surface language, you know, and you've spoken on this on a number of occasions, if we don't get beyond the surface language, we're not going to get what we need in terms of understanding of how we operate as human beings.
More significantly, if we don't get beyond the surface language, we don't start where Allah wants us to start, and that is the science of the matter. The surface language doesn't talk about the science, doesn't show you, obviously, the science of the matter. It's embedded in the message, so that you know that you've got the truth out of the message. He tells us all the time where to look and how to see. And all of it requires that we are in agreement with the journey to get the information. He doesn't throw it on us, which is why it's not written, obviously, in a way where you can conceive it easily. There's got to be work involved, and the work involved, it demonstrates your willingness to be on the journey to find the message. And sticking with the truth of the matter, truth is fact. Truth doesn't mean I'm not going to deceive you or I try not to deceive you. Truth is 2 + 2 = 4. Water freezes at 32 degrees. The brain operates this way. The body operates that way. That's the truth. The sun, the moon, the stars, they rotate this way. Science of the matter. Then from there you can figure, you have the foundation and ponder what the psychology of the matter. Then you go in, the science of the matter will take you to the inside of the brain, understanding the psychology. And from there you ponder the philosophy. And then you can apply what you learned through that journey sociologically, and your morals are grounded in truth. They started with truth. They didn't. If you start with the sociology, you think that Adam contributed rib to Eve, and that's how women got here. Obviously, that's not the truth of the matter, because that's not how we make people now. So that's bringing things to the truth of the matter. The truth is what's going to break. It's simple and it's complex. It's complex, and that's why I use that example. It's complex because that boy had an interaction with so many people from so many different areas where he's a man, so he's been triggered in a way where little girls may not be as triggered. He's triggered in a way that's going to stick with him forever unless he learns how to process what he endured. The authority, he had the male officer, the female officer, the teacher, the principal and assistant principal. These are 5 people. Not one of them thought, hey, it's too many of us to be talking to him. Have you had it? Where was the compassion? And I don't blame them per se. I say that there is a lot of work in a whole lot of areas that we really, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And first, the adults have to start with themselves. You can't parent the children if you haven't parented yourself. And the truth is, you need to parent yourself. Up until now, we're not going to pretend like there is ever a perfect or a better place that we've existed in humanity. We still have work to do, and most of that work is going to be in parenting ourselves and parenting the children. They're not going to trust us. That young man had his mother, and I'm so grateful at her response. She, $275,000 wasn't enough. Had I been the scientist on the team, I'd have showed her how his damage, how the trauma was way worth more than $275,000. You know, that was the saving grace, and that's why I chose that, because she's not single. She may not be a single mother. It's assumed that she is because her son is acting up. That's another thing we get out of the story. She must be a single parent. But if you look closely at her behavior, she's a valid parent because she knew how to deal with those adults, and they didn't know how to deal with the five-year-old. So
my
here's
goodness.
The thing.
This is Sister Lou Princess. This was the beginning of school. And every school, you have this separation thing, the anxiousness and anxiety and the disruptive behavior because you're being separated from and brought into a strange environment. You know, that's not a hard thing.
See, our teachers knew that. They responded to that. When I grew up, my teachers knew that. Put your head down. Many times I head down. Teachers knew that. They're hiring teachers straight out of high school now. You just go through 2 years, plan to be with us through the master's program, but you can get in that classroom with just 2 years of your education. There's not enough that you know and not enough that you've learned and unlearned as an educator in the classroom. Can't run the classroom like you run your children at home. That boy picked up that energy, and he didn't know how to respond to it. He was exhausted and probably didn't know how to carry any more of it, and then there was this, what are you doing? They do that a lot to our black children, particularly our black boys. That's another reason why I use that example. At another school with another demographic, Johnny Michael Scott would have been asked to take a nap. And I will say this to the people that are of a different demographic that are turning their backs, recognize that they use a certain demographic as projects to gather data before they unleash this policy or procedure or practice onto mainstream. So you can't afford to turn your back.
As I understand it, from a number of quarters, the educational environment is being looked at and scrutinized because this psychology is already known. Boys have the testosterone development. You know, they need to be active. Sitting still is not something, particularly in the early ages of the young men, is not something that is functionally helpful to learn. Just to sit still is not something that boys can do easily because of, you know, they're growing into young men, you know. And so I understand that, you know, the educational environment is under assault just like many other institutions.
It's a machine used to push to produce a certain type of person. It's not a machine that's going to produce a thinking, critically thinking person, human being. It's the history of education tells you that its function is to produce, it's to produce a worker, and in that production, it is also collecting data for the projects that they put on or implement, and most all of the projects start in our community. And so for those that are not in our community that say, hey, I'm glad it's not me, you need to look at the pattern. It's going to be you, and it's not just going to be you. It's going to be other places around the world as they get this data from us and implement these things that they're doing to us in other areas. But I'm not. Okay. I'm not afraid of. We don't want to be afraid of that, but we want to address ourselves individually so that we experience the best life that we can, and in that we would transfer that energy to other people around us. Compassion will not be hard to do. if we're functioning individually.
Yes.
I'm not responding to my triggers at a five from a five-year-old. No one, not one of the five or six adults said, hey,
yes,
this is a five-year-old. Not the administrator, they responded with their, They reacted, and all reactions come from a trigger. All triggers are rooted deeply in the individual. You didn't get offended by that five-year-old. That five-year-old, you were triggered by something in you that isn't, you hadn't strengthened, or you were weak at. Your five-year-old met that five-year-old, and you fought him like a five-year-old. Closing remarks. Well,
yes, ma'am.
Let's work on parenting ourselves better. We're going to start with learning, assessing our executive functioning, and let's grow in our compassion. Let's use gratitude, and most importantly, controlling our triggers. Let's remain unoffended and be mindful of when we are offending. So, do come back. Thank you all for listening, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to our guest, Lou Princess Aziz, Keeping It Real, Sunday on am360.org, 4 o'clock Eastern. Please join us again next week. We hope to have a guest that is dealing with, hopefully I'll just say it outright because we've been talking, Imam Ronald Shahid. He has produced the Ramadan Session books, volume 1, 2, and volume 3 of the Ramadan Sessions has been produced, and it's available. And we ask you to join us next Thursday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, and 5 o'clock on the Pacific Coast. Again, thank you very much for joining us. We
thank you
very much. I want to close out. I want to keep the habit of making a supplication or dua to Almighty God, seeking His help. Oh Allah, guide us among those you've guided aright. Save us among those you save. Bless us in whatever you grant us, and deliver us from the harm that you judge. You judge, and none can judge against you. And those whom you befriend are not disgraced. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you again.